Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, 18, Preacher's Fury, by William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Elizabeth Jernigan, Thomas Keegan, Greg Gorton, James Lewis, Stephen Carpenter, Bradley Smith, Richard Rowan, Joe Brack, Christopher Graybill, and Nanette Savard. The trading post was called Blind Pete's Place. The proprietor wasn't blind, and his name wasn't really Pete either. He was a German named Horst Grunwald, but he preferred to be called Pete. And since he was more than 6 feet tall and almost 250 pounds of pure muscle, folks didn't argue with him. His eyes were his only weakness, and the thick spectacles he wore allowed him to see well enough to crack a troublemaker's head open with a ham-like fist if he needed to. Preacher was tired and thirsty. He wanted a drink, maybe some hot food, then he would find himself a place to camp near the trading post. Recently, he had spent several months down in Santa Fe, recuperating from some injuries, so he'd had plenty of having a roof over his head for a while. A big, shaggy, wolf-like cur padded alongside the rangy gray stallion Preacher rode. He called the dog, Dog, and his horse, Horse. Simple was best in Preacher's book.
Go on, you varmint. I know you're itching to get there and say howdy to your sweethearts.
Tongue lolling happily, Dog bounded on down the hill ahead of Preacher and Horse. Blind Pete had a couple of wolfhound bitches, and Dog was eager to get reacquainted with
them. You, been to this place before?
Preacher looked over at the small, elderly black man who rode beside him, named Lorenzo.
Oh, yeah. A heap of times.
Folks around here got anything against colored fellas?
Oh, you could be colored or green or blue and it wouldn't make a lick of difference. Out here in the mountains, we judge folks by what they do, not by what they look like.
Well, that's the way it ought to be, I reckon. But that ain't always how it is.
No, I wouldn't worry.
I'll take your word for it.
Preacher had met Lorenzo back in St. Louis, where he'd gone to settle a score with an old enemy. They'd been traveling together ever since. Lorenzo had never been west before, and he was enjoying the journey. The two riders reached the bottom of the hill and started across a stretch of open ground toward the trading post, which was built near a fast-flowing creek. It was a sturdy, sprawling log building with a stockade fence around it that also enclosed a barn and corral. Watchtowers rose at each end of the fence. The place was laid out with defense against attack in mind. Things were peaceful enough these days that the gate in the fence stood wide open. Dog was already inside the stockade. Preacher and Lorenzo followed, trailing the pack horses behind them. Preacher lifted a hand in a lazy wave to a man lounging in one of the guard towers. The pair intended to move farther north, and they needed to replenish their supplies while they had the chance. That was why they were stopping here at Blind Pete's place. A number of horses milled around in the corral. Preacher studied them, thinking he might recognize a mount he knew. None of the animals seemed familiar to him, though. Preacher didn't intend to spend the night here, so he and Lorenzo rode to the hitch rack in front of the main building instead of the corral, and they dismounted. Preacher stepped up onto the porch.
What's that fella going on about?
Not much telling. He's always got something to say, though.
You know him?
Yep. He fancies himself an orator.
Two of them stepped into the trading post. The main room was a big, low-ceilinged chamber. To the right were a bar and several tables. To the left, shelves and crates and barrels full of merchandise, with a counter at the far end of the room. One of the benches had been pulled into an open area of floor. The man who'd been spouting words as Preacher and Lorenzo entered stood on the bench with one arm lifted over his head in a dramatic stance. He was only about 3.5 feet tall, but his brawny shoulders and full beard testified that he was a man full-grown, or as full-grown as he was gonna get anyway. His eyes widened at the sight of the tall, lean figure in the doorway.
Preacher!
Well, it's good to see you again, Audie. Nimbly, the little man hopped down from the bench and hurried toward the newcomers. He held out a hand and shook gravely with Preacher. With his other hand, he jerked a thumb toward a blanket-wrapped shape sitting in a corner.
I'm afraid my recitation from Dr. Faustus has put Nighthawk to sleep. The unenlightened fellow never has had much appreciation for the works of Marlowe. He's more partial to the immortal bard, although, of course, there are some scholars who make the claim that Marlowe actually penned those words attributed to the actor from Stratford-on-Avon. But I'm positive that he'll be quite pleased to see you when he awakens. Nighthawk, I mean, not Bill Shakelance.
Preacher grinned over at Lorenzo, who stood there open-mouthed in pure awe.
Oh, yeah, he does like to go on a mite, Audie. Meet Lorenzo here. Him and me been traveling together for a spell.
Audie grabbed the stunned Lorenzo's hand and pumped it heartily.
The honor is mine, sir. Any boon companion of Preacher's is a boon companion of mine.
Sure. Pleased to meet you, too.
The crow over yonder in the blanket, Lorenzo, is Nighthawk. He don't say much, so he sort of balances Audie out when it comes to talking.
We're a fine pair indeed. You're not wintering in St. Louis this year, Preacher?
No, I've had enough of that damn St. Louis to last me for a long time. Hell, I might just spend the rest of my life in these here mountains.
There are much worse places to be. That's indisputable. Nighthawk and I have been giving some thought to spending the winter with Chief Bentleg and his band of Assiniboine. Perhaps you and Lorenzo would care to join us.
Well, now that ain't a bad idea. Old Bentleg's a pretty good fella. His people are friendly to whites.
You maybe got so used to being around me, Preacher, that you don't notice no more. But I ain't exactly white.
Oh, to the Assiniboine you are, or you might as well be. That's one thing about the tribes. Now, to their way of thinking, there's them, then there's everybody else. The name of the tribes usually translate to the people, or the real people, or the true people. Well, some of them are more tolerant of us lower classes than others. Like Nighthawk's people, the Crow, they generally get along with most other folks except for the Blackfoot. Now, those two bunches don't cotton to each other at all.
Nighthawk didn't bother to look up. Audie started toward one of the tables and motioned for Preacher and Lorenzo to follow him.
I think we could all use a libation.
Hey, little bit, you can't just stop in the middle of a poem like that. You need to finish your reciting. Damn your midget hide.
Oh, hell.
What's wrong?
I don't know who that fella is, but now he has gone and done it.
Done what?
He done cried havoc and let slip the dogs of war.
Audie stood very still as he looked at the man who had spoken to him. 5 other men were at the table where the man had been sitting. Some were in buckskins, some in town clothes that had seen better days. They were all armed, and they all looked tough and ornery.
Were you speaking to me, sir?
You're the only damn sawed-off runt in this place, ain't you? Shoot, don't take offense, little bit. I liked your poem. Well, I wanted to hear the rest of it.
I'm glad you have an appreciation for the finer things in life, sir. Unfortunately, that doesn't negate the fact that you're an ass.
What'd you call me?
I called you an ass, but I'm sorry for that.
Oh, you are you?
That's right. I inadvertently insulted all the honest, hard-working asses in the world by comparing them to a sorry pile of dung such as yourself.
The man's eyes widened in rage. But before he could do anything, Audie sprang forward and drove a punch into his belly. As the man doubled over, Audie brought his knee up. The man fell to his knees, half stunned. That put him at just the perfect height for the haymaker that Audie uncorked on him next.
Get that little varmint!
Preacher glanced at Lorenzo.
You game to take a hand in this?
You know I am.
They stepped up, flanking Audie as the five men rushed to the attack. The five ruffians had forgotten about Nighthawk, though. The big warrior came swooping out of the corner. He caught two of the men by the neck and he banged their heads together. Preacher blocked a punch from the other man, then hammered a fist to the man's belly. But it was like hitting a wall. The man's fist thudded into Preacher's chest and knocked him back a step. While Preacher was a little off balance, the man tackled him. Preacher grabbed the front of the man's buckskin shirt and hauled hard on it, throwing the man to the side. The next second, the man drew up a foot, planted it into Preacher's belly, and levered the mountain man up and over it. His stocky opponent was already up. He grabbed the back of Preacher's shirt and slung him into some shells. Preacher caught himself against the shells before he fell again. He met him with a hard, straight right that landed square on his nose and pulped it. Mountain Man did not ease off now that he had the advantage either. Preacher swung around. He'd been too busy to keep up with how Lorenzo and Audie were doing against their opponents. He hoped his friends were all right. Well, they were more than all right, Preacher saw. They had emerged from the battle triumphant. Audie, in fact, was standing with one foot on the chest of an unconscious man, dusting his hands off against each other in obvious satisfaction. A few feet away, Lorenzo leaned against the table and grinned. His hat had been knocked off, and he had a few scrapes on his face, but he seemed to be fine otherwise.
What a fine display of pugilistic excellence.
Is he saying we whooped him good?
Pete stalked out from behind the counter and came along the aisle toward him.
Somebody will have to pay for these damages, y'all.
Oh, he started it. I reckon you can check their pockets.
Pete jerked his shelf-like jaw at the man Preacher had knocked out.
Do you know who that is?
No, and I don't care.
His name is Willie Deaver. That one is Caleb Manning.
Pete pointed at the long-haired man Audie had knocked out to start the ruckus.
I do not know the names of the other men, but they are the same sort as Deaver and Manning. Bad men. You would be wise to leave before they wake up, Preacher.
I ain't in the habit of running away from trouble. Fact is, the last thing I ran away from was my folks' farm, and that was one hell of a long time ago.
You would not be fleeing. You would be saving my place from even more damage.
That's fine. Lorenzo and me didn't plan to stay the night here anyway. We just wanted to pick up some supplies.
I will give you a good price if you tell me what you need, so you can load them up and leave.
What about you fellas? Are we all riding together and heading for Bent Legs Village?
That strikes me as a more than agreeable course of action.
All right. Okay, Pete. We need flour, salt, dried apples, beans, maybe a little coffee and molasses if you got it, and some salt jaw.
I will put everything in a bag.
We'll go saddle our horses. Come on, Nighthawk.
10 minutes later, the four men were ready to ride out. Preacher had settled up with Pete for the supplies.
Much obliged. Too bad about the trouble.
Didn't like that. Trouble always follows them. You should watch your back, Preacher.
Well, I always do. So long, Pete.
Guten Tag, meine Freund.
The group began riding toward the gate.
You talk that Dutch lingo.
Ein bisschen?
No, I ain't bitching. I don't care what you talk.
9, 9, 10.
That's what comes next. What we counting anyway?
You might as well give up. He'll pick at you all day if you let him.
Dog came running from somewhere in the compound.
I'm sorry if you didn't get to do as much visiting as you'd like. But you know, we got places to go.
They rode out of the stockade, putting the trading post behind them and heading north toward a range of snow-capped mountains. Blind Pete leaned on the counter as he laboriously entered numbers into the ledger book that lay before him. He chewed at the gray and blonde mustache that drooped over his mouth. He'd learned to cipher as a young boy in Dusseldorf, but it had never come easy to him all the same. Despite what Preacher had said, Pete hadn't taken any coins from the pockets of Deaver, Manning, and the other men to pay for the damages caused by the brawl. If Deaver had woken up to find someone rifling his pockets, there would have been hell to pay. Besides, there really hadn't been that much damage. Pete made sure to have a loaded shotgun lying on the counter in front of him when the men regained consciousness.
Preacher and the others are gone. There will be no more trouble here, yeah?
Caleb Manning had looked like he wanted to take out his anger on the proprietor, but Deaver had stopped him.
Let it go. It ain't Pete's fault that Preacher and his friends jumped us. If there's a score to settle, it's with them.
That reasonable attitude surprised Pete, but he welcomed it. He was even more surprised a few minutes later when Deaver laid a $5 gold piece on the counter.
That's for the whiskey we drank and the trouble we caused. Are we square, Pete?
Yeah, we are square.
So, we're welcome back here.
Yeah, of course.
Obliged. Come on, we're riding.
Night had fallen now. The trading post's other customers had gone on their way, except for a couple of trappers who were spending the night in the little rooms at the back of the building. The only light in the main room of the trading post was the candle that burned on the counter and cast its flickering light on the ledger. Pete dipped his pen in the inkwell and wrote a few more numbers in his cramped, precise script. The front door swung open. Pete looked up in surprise. It was rare for him to have customers this late. And the guard in the tower would have blown on the trumpet that was kept up there to announce visitors. Anyone who rode up in the dark would be challenged before they were let into the compound. Clearly, that hadn't happened, because two men strode into the trading post and started toward the counter where Pete stood. Through the thick spectacles that perched on his nose with a ribbon attaching him to his collar, he recognized the newcomers. It was Deaver and Manning.
Mine Herrs, I did not expect to see you again so soon.
I'll bet you didn't. I realized that we forgot something when we left this afternoon.
Oh, what was that?
We forgot to ask you if you know where Preacher and his friends are going.
They never mentioned where they were going. They just bought some supplies from me and rode out.
Uh-huh. Now, did you see which direction they headed?
Nein, no.
Now, see, Pete, I've got a problem. I think you might be lying to me.
You have no right to speak to me in such a way.
I'll talk to you any way I want, you big fat Dutchman.
Deaver flicked a glance at Manning and nodded. Pete knew he was in trouble. He started to straighten and reach under the counter for the shotgun he had placed there earlier. But before he could move, Manning whipped out his hunting knife and plunged it down into the back of Pete's right hand. Deaver brought out a pistol. The heavy lead ball smashed into Pete's left shoulder.
Now see, you should have convinced me right off that you were telling the truth.
My men, they've been...
They won't do a damned thing. The rest of the boys have finished cutting their throats by now. You should have posted a better guard, Pete. That poor fella up in the tower was wearing a bloody grin from ear to ear before he knew what was happening to him. I'll ask you again, and you better not lie to me. Where was Preacher going?
I don't.
Manning leaned on the knife and twisted it. Pete suddenly jerked back as hard as he could with his right arm, putting his considerable strength behind him. Abruptly, Pete's hand was free. He couldn't make a fist with that ruined hand, but he could swing his whole arm. He threw himself forward over the counter and crashed his forearm against the side of Manning's head. The blow knocked Manning into Deaver, and both of them got tangled up for a minute. That gave Pete time to roll off the front of the counter and land on his feet. He kicked Manning in the groin and barreled into Deaver. Pete was halfway to the front door.
I'll kill you, you blasted!
Wait a minute!
Manning stumbled into Pete's view, which was blurry now because his spectacles had fallen off. Pete could still see well enough to know that Manning was clutching himself or he'd been kicked. And Pete felt a little bit of satisfaction from that anyway.
Let me work on him. He'll tell us what we want to know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's cut these trousers off of him.
No! No!
And in the end, of course, he told them how the mountain man and his companions had talked about spending the winter in the Assiniboine village. Deaver and Manning believed him this time.
Go ahead and kill me.
I don't think so. That'd be too easy. There are some knives over there in a case, Caleb. Get a couple of them and we'll stake him out.
They spread his arms, and Manning drove a knife through the palm of each hand.
What about his feet?
He ain't going anywhere, just like that. We're not leaving anybody alive except for the Dutchman here. And he won't be alive very long once we burn this place down around him.
The roaring blaze behind him turned the night sky an ugly, garish shade of orange as Deaver, Manning, and the other three men rode away from the trading post. Manning shifted uncomfortably in his saddle.
Feeling any better?
Not much. Old man deserved everything he got.
Yeah, but at least he told us where to find Preacher.
We don't have time to go after him right now, Willie. You know that. We got a rendezvous with them other fellas. I was willing to come back here tonight.
Don't worry. I haven't forgotten about that business we have to take care of. But Pete said Preacher was planning to winter with Bentleg's bunch of Redskins. And our business won't take us all winter. There'll be plenty of time later on to teach that son of a bitch and his friends a lesson they'll never forget.
All right. I like the sound of that.
A storm roared down out of Canada a few days later, bringing with it a biting wind and hard pellets of sleet that pelted down, making life miserable for man and horse alike. Because of that, Preacher considered them lucky to have found the cave where they could get out of the weather. It was empty, so they didn't have to share it with a hibernating grizzly bear.
Have you ever been here before, Preacher?
Not that I recollect. I recall riding through this valley before, but I must not have stopped and looked around any. How about you?
No, it's all new to me as well.
Mm.
What's that you say? You've been here before? 8 winters ago?
Mm. How's he do that? I never heard that engine do nothing except make that sound like he's trying to pass something that hurts.
Well, they got their own way of communicating, I reckon.
Yes, I agree that it's a fine place. We should be able to wait here until the storm blows over. Lorenzo, why don't you tell us how you and Preacher came to meet, my friend?
Here's a long story, and it ain't a particularly pretty one.
Audie smiled and spread his hand.
Until the weather gods smile upon us again, we have nothing but time.
Well, I reckon that's true enough. You mind if I tell the story?
Hell no. Like Audie says, we ain't got nothing but time.
Well, it was back in St. Louis, see? And I was working for a fella who was nothing but a low-down, dyed-in-the-wool varmint.
You were his slave?
Oh, no, sir. I was a freedman. But Mr. Shad Beaumont, he was as bad or worse than any plantation owner who might have put me to work picking cotton.
Lorenzo continued with the story of how Preacher had come to St. Louis to settle a score with Shad Beaumont, criminal who was responsible for causing a lot of trouble for Preacher and some of his friends on the frontier. Because of Beaumont, people Preacher cared about had died, and the mountain man couldn't let that pass. It just wasn't in him. Preacher's enmity for Beaumont hadn't extended to all the folks who worked for the man, however, and he had found an unexpected ally in Lorenzo. They've been traveling together ever since, along with another former employee of Beaumont's, a young woman called Casey, who had formed an attachment with Preacher. Along with the members of a wagon train, the three of them had made a perilous journey over the Santa Fe Trail. Casey had married one of the young men from the wagon train and remained behind in Santa Fe, and Preacher was glad of that. She'd had it in her head for a while that she ought to marry him, that never would have worked out. He was not the sort of hombre to get hitched permanent-like. although he did enjoy the company of women and had spent more than one winter in temporary marriages to women from various Indian tribes. None of them expected him to stay in one place for more than a few months.
It certainly sounds as if you've had some thrilling adventures. As for Nighthawk and myself, we first met Preacher a while back down in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains while he was looking for an ancient Spanish treasure.
You're a treasure hunter, Preacher?
Oh, I was just helping some other folks look for it. I can't think of nothing much worse than winding up a rich man. Too much money will weigh a man down every bit as much as change will.
I wouldn't know. Wouldn't mind getting the chance to find out one of these days, though.
People like to cite scripture and claim that money is the root of all evil. Actually, that's an incorrect quote. The verse actually says that the love of money is the root of all evil.
I don't love money. I'm just passing fond of it, that's all.
They talked until the fire burned down. Then Preacher, Lorenzo, and Nighthawk rolled up in their blankets to sleep. Audie stayed awake to take the first turn on guard duty, nursing a cup of coffee as he sat beside the glowing embers of the fire. The clouds had blown on by the morning, leaving behind air cold enough to make a man gasp when he took a deep breath, as well as a landscape that glittered so brightly in the sun that it might as well have been covered by diamonds. The ice storm had coated the ground as well as the trees and bushes.
Lordy, it's beautiful. We used to get sleep back in St. Louis, but it never left the place looking anything like this.
Like an ice castle from a fairy tale.
I wouldn't know nothing about no fairy tales, but this here is right pretty.
Yeah, and as slick as it can be. Hoss might slip and bust a leg on that stuff. We'll just stay here until it melts off.
That happened the next day when the wind turned back around to the south and blew strongly. By mid-morning, the temperature had warmed above freezing. Water was dripping everywhere as the ice melted. The four men rode north again, climbing toward a saddle between two peaks. Preacher didn't know how they were designated on maps, but he called the mountains the Sleeping Woman and Old Baldy, because that's what they reminded him of. On the other side of those mountains lay a valley that stretched for 20 miles north and south and was about 5 miles wide. That valley was the domain of Chief Bentleg's band of Assiniboine. There was plenty of game, and another range of mountains at the northern end gave it some protection from the weather. It was a good place to spend the winter. They camped that night at the base of Old Baldy and climbed to the high pass the next day. Even though Lorenzo was riding, he began to breathe harder the higher they climbed.
Lord, there ain't much air in the air up here, is there?
Well, you get used to it when you spend some time in the high country. Don't try to gulp down so much of it at a time. Just breathe more shallow-like.
Lorenzo tried to follow the advice, and soon he felt a little better.
Just imagine what it must be like to try to breathe at the summit of some of the great mountain ranges of the world, like the Alps. And I've heard it said that there are some even taller at the edge of the Orient.
Never heard of them places. This is pretty high for me. Remember, I'm a flatlander. Land's sake, you must be able to see for 100 miles up here.
No, probably not that far. You can see good ways, though. It's a right pretty view, too.
That it is. Never thought I'd see the likes of that in all my born days.
They pushed on and made it through the pass by late afternoon. There was just enough light left for them to descend a short distance into the valley and find a place to camp. They did that on a little bench that backed up to a rocky bluff so they'd be out of the wind.
With any luck, we'll find Bentleg's village tomorrow.
What's this fella Bentleg like? I reckon it's safe for me to assume that he's got a bent leg.
Oh, yeah. Got broke in a fight with a Gros Ventre when he was a youngster. Didn't heal back right, so it's always had a funny kink to it ever since. It didn't stop him from getting around, though, and he grew up into quite a warrior. He's getting on in years now, but he's a good leader for his people.
Who are the Gros... What you call them?
Rovant. That's another tribe. Lives west of here a ways. They don't get along with the Assiniboine. Anytime tribes don't cotton each other, they raid back and forth, and it was during one of those raids that Bent Leg got hurt. The Gros Ventres stole some horses and took some captives to make slaves out of them.
I don't think I like these Gros Ventres folks. I ain't even met any of them yet.
Because they take slaves? Almost every tribe has been known to do that at one time or another. Not only that, but were you born in this country, Lorenzo?
I sure was. Born and bred in Missouri.
Well, your ancestors in Africa almost certainly had slaves from other tribes there with which they were at odds. It's an accepted form of warfare across the entire world.
That don't make it right?
No, certainly not. But it's a matter of historical record that the African tribes were quite proficient at capturing slaves from other tribes and selling and trading them to the Americans who sailed slave ships to their shores, especially during the last century.
How come you know so much?
Audie used to be a teacher at one of them colleges back east before he chucked all that and became a fur trapper.
Why would you want to do that?
Because the color of one's skin is not the only means by which people discriminated. I was tired of being judged solely by my stature, or lack of same, and not by what was in my heart and my head.
Reckon I can understand that. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Now, you looked a mite funny to me at first, but now you're just Audie. I don't even think about the other no more.
Nor does your Moorish coloring bother me, my friend.
No, I told you. I'm from Missouri.
Preacher was about to chuckle when some instinct warned him. Maybe he'd heard a faint noise from atop the bluff at their backs. Whatever it was, it brought him to his feet in a swift, sudden movement. Before he could draw his gun, a shape plummeted down from the top of the bluff. The figure crashed into Preacher and drove him to the ground. The ball from Audie's pistol smashed into the side of the Indian's head. The attacker wasn't alone, though. Rifles blasted from the top of the bluff. The balls thudded into the ground as Audie, Nighthawk, and Lorenzo scrambled in different directions. Preacher flung the dead Indian's body aside, snatched up the tomahawk the man had dropped, and sent it spinning toward the bluff top with a flick of his wrist. A man suddenly pitched over the edge and plummeted to the ground, landing next to the fire. The light from the flames revealed that the tomahawk was buried deeply in his forehead. The preacher pushed himself to his feet and planted his back against the rock wall. From there, he could see that Audie, Nighthawk, and Lorenzo had reached the cover of the trees that grew around the clearing where they'd made camp. They opened fire, peppering the top of the bluff with rifle balls. The preacher had been about to draw his pistols and try to get a shot, but now he decided to leave the guns where they were for the moment. Instead, he turned and faced the bluff. It was steep, but not quite sheer. Rocks stuck out from it here and there to form handholds, and a few hardy plants grew on it as well. Reaching as high as he could, he found a handhold, got one of his feet on a rock lower down, and started the climb. The men on the bluff and the ones in the trees continued to trade shots while Preacher made his ascent. Preacher had gotten a good enough look at the two dead Indians to know that they weren't part of Bent Leg's band of Assiniboines. He could tell by the decorations on their buckskins and the way their faces were painted that they were Gros Ventres. They probably ventured this far east to raid Bent Leg's village. As Preacher neared the top of the bluff, he stopped long enough to pull one of his pistols from behind his belt. Then he grasped one of the small, sturdy bushes and lifted himself higher as a rifle blasted a short distance above him. Preacher pushed with his legs and drove himself up. His head and shoulders cleared the rim. The Gros Ventre was on one knee, ramming a fresh load down the barrel of his rifle when Preacher appeared and took him plumb by surprise. The Gros Ventres hadn't expected to find Preacher among them. He rolled onto the bluff and came up with his other pistol in his left hand. Preacher heard a rush of footsteps behind him and whirled to see one of the warriors charging him and swinging a tomahawk. Preacher ducked under the slash and blow and crowded against the man. The empty pistol in Preacher's right hand smashed down against the warrior's temple. Preacher listened intently for the sounds of anyone fleeing. but he didn't hear anything.
Preacher, are you all right?
Oh, hell yeah. That seems to be all of them.
You killed everyone up there?
That seemed like the thing to do at the time.
Preacher sheathed his knife and swiftly reloaded his pistols. The raiders' horses had to be somewhere nearby. He went to look for them and found them tied in a stand of trees about 50 yards away. He untied the ponies, gathered their reins, and led them along the bluff, looking for a way down. He left the dead warriors where they had fallen. A couple of hundred yards away, the slope fell away at a gentler angle. Preacher was able to lead the ponies down it. He started back toward the fire.
Hello, camp! Just me, so don't get antsy.
When he walked up leading the horses, he found Audie and Lorenzo standing there, alert and watchful for trouble, while Nighthawk dragged the corpses of the other Grovant into the trees.
We ain't gonna bury these fellas.
I ain't in the habit of going to the time and trouble to bury folks who would try to kill me and my friends. Wolves will take care of them for us.
Fine by me. I was just asking.
Grovant, by their markings. We were just talking about them. Do you think they came looking for Bentleg's village, Preacher?
Well, that'd be my guess. They either didn't find it yet, or else the raid didn't go so good. They didn't have any prisoners or stolen ponies with them.
Nighthawk came back from disposing of the bodies in the woods. He pointed to the top of the bluff.
I didn't hear anything. Did you, Preacher?
No, I reckon everybody up there's dead. Doggone if you ain't right, Nighthawk. Somebody is alive up there. Don't know who it could be, though. All of the Grovant are accounted for.
A prisoner could have been riding double with one of them.
You and Nighthawk stay down here and be ready for trouble. Audie and me will go have a look.
I'm not sure I can climb that bluff.
There's an easier place over yonder's away.
Preacher led Audie to the spot where he had brought the ponies down from the bluff. They climbed to the top without any trouble and started back along the rim.
Somebody's in there, all right. You want me to take a look, Preacher?
No, I can do it.
I'm smaller. I can get through that brush easier than you can.
Well, all right. Be careful. You don't know what you're going to find in there. Might be a bear.
Doesn't sound like a bear to me.
Audie handed his rifle to Preacher and drew a pistol instead. A shotgun would be much easier to use in that brush if Audie had to shoot. He pushed some of the branches aside and disappeared through the small opening he had made.
Preacher, you're going to want to look at this. Just push the brush aside. There's nothing to worry about.
Audie knelt there next to a shape Preacher couldn't quite make out in the darkness.
Just a moment, and I'll have this loose.
Preacher got the sense that Audie wasn't talking to him. It was starting to look like the Grovant had had a prisoner with him after all.
There you are. You should be able to breathe easier now that that gag is gone. I'll cut these bonds on your hands and feet. Whoa!
Audie, you all right?
Back away, white man, or I will cut this child's throat.
Madam, please, I'm not a child. And I give you my word that I didn't intend to touch you in such an indelicate fashion. I was simply trying to determine your circumstances.
By pawing me all over?
It was too dark to see.
Take it easy, ma'am. If you were a prisoner of that Grovant raiding party, then we're your friends. We're the ones who done for him.
Are they all dead?
That's right. Now, Audie, I reckon the lady grabbed your knife away from you as soon as you cut her hands loose?
Yes, and I'll thank you not to tell Nighthawk about this. He'd never let me hear the end of it.
Ma'am, you wouldn't happen to be a Cinnaborn, would you? One of Bentleg's people?
You know Bentleg?
Oh, for a good many years now. My name's Preacher.
Preacher?
That's right.
I am sorry.
Thank you for taking that knife away from my throat, my dear. It was getting a bit nerve-wracking having it there. My Adam's apple was rather jumpy.
Here's your knife. Are you sure you are not a child?
Quite certain. And again, I apologize for any inadvertent improprieties.
Someone help me up.
Preacher stepped forward and extended a hand.
Here.
Even in this bad light, Preacher could make out the shape of her face and the long wings of dark hair that framed it.
Thank you.
She let go of his hand and tried to take a step, but her balance deserted her and she leaned toward him suddenly. Preacher slipped his arm around her waist to steady her.
Whoa, you've been tied up for a while, haven't you? Your legs don't want to work right just yet.
I'm fine. You can let go of me now.
Are you sure?
I am certain.
Preacher took his arm away and stepped back. The woman seemed to be steady on her feet now.
We have a camp down below. You can get some hot food in you, and then you can tell us what happened to you.
What will you do with me?
Why, we'll return you to your home as soon as it gets light tomorrow, dear lady. Isn't that right, Preacher?
Oh, yeah. We'll take you back to Bent Legs Village.
Thank you.
Come on. There's a path over yonder where we can get down to the bluff.
Preacher led the way, holding the branches aside so the Assiniboine woman could get through the brush easier.
We're coming down. We found a prisoner up here.
A few minutes later, the three of them walked into camp. Nighthawk had built up the fire so the flames cast a large circle of light. When the woman stepped into that reddish gold glow, Preacher got his first good look at her. And let me tell you, she was a sight worth waiting for. She was medium height and well-shaped in the buckskin dress she wore, with wide hips, muscular calves, and high, firm breasts. Her face was slightly rounded. Long hair the color of midnight surrounded it and flowed down over her shoulders. Her cheekbones weren't quite as high as those of most Indian women, and her skin was a slightly lighter shade of copper. Those were indications that she had some white blood in her, and her dark blue eyes confirmed that. Probably her father or grandfather had been white, either an American or a French-Canadian fur trapper, more than likely.
Now, you already know who I am. This is Audie and Lorenzo Nighthawk.
I am called Ravenswing, or simply Raven. Thank you for helping me. It might have taken me a long time to get free if you had not found me.
Nighthawk, you reckon you can rustle up some grub for Raven?
Nighthawk went to their supplies and set to work.
Did the Grovant capture you when they raided your village?
Yes. I was the only captive they managed to get away with. Even though they took us by surprise, our warriors were able to make them flee. They didn't even get any of our ponies.
And just one woman?
Yes, just one woman.
And when they smelled our smoke and decided to have a look, they tied and gagged you and stashed you in that brush?
Yes. They warned me that if I tried to escape, they would come back and cut my throat. Now they are the ones who are dead.
You have Preacher to thank for that.
How come you didn't make any noise when I first came up there looking for their ponies?
I did not know who you were. You might have been someone even worse than the Grovant. I thought I could get loose on my own after you left. But then I tried and realized I was tied too tightly. If no one found me and freed me, I might have died of thirst. So I started making noises in the hopes that you would return. And you did, along with this little one and his hands.
I told you, Miss Ravenswing, how sorry I am that I...
Oh, I think she's just joshing you now, Audie. She got a mischievous look about her.
That is right. I know you were just trying to help me. I thank you for that.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Nighthawk fried some salt jowl and heated a couple of biscuits left over from their supper. When he gave Raven the food, she knelt beside the fire and ate hungrily, washing down the food with water from Preacher's canteen.
Why are you men in the Valley of the Assiniboine?
We came to see if Bent Leg would be willing to let us spend the winter with you folks. I know we let trappers do that before.
You have never wintered with the Assiniboine before. I would remember if you had. That is true for all of you.
This is my first winter out here, so I ain't never stayed with any of the tribes.
And Nighthawk and I have spent most winters with his people, the Crow.
Why do you not go to the Crow this winter?
A man likes to do something different now and again.
I know what men want different. You want a different squaw to share your blankets every year.
Oh, we're just looking for a place to get out of the weather. First snows will fly in a week or two.
This is true. My people's village is less than a half a day's ride from here. You can present your request to Bent Leg and see what he says. If he refuses, you will still have time to look elsewhere.
That's fair enough. If you don't mind my asking, where'd you learn to speak English? I mean, you seem to savvy it pretty good.
My father was a trapper who came up the Missouri River to Fort Lisa. He remained in the mountains for the rest of his life. He married my mother and taught me the white man's tongue.
Huh. What was his name? I've been out here for a good many years myself. Maybe I ran into him at a rendezvous or something like that.
His name was George Harris.
Old Georgie? Oh, shoot, yeah. I never knew him well, but we shook and howdied a few times. You say he's crossed the divide?
2 years ago, a fever took him.
Well, I'm right sorry to hear that. He's a good man. I never heard anybody say any different.
Thank you.
Have you ever given any thought to going east to attend a real school, Raven?
Everything I need is in these mountains.
But with an actual education, you could...
Preacher silenced Audie with an outstretched hand. He'd heard something in the trees. He knew better than to think it was the Gros Ventre Raiders come back to life. Noises meant flesh and blood. He reached for his rifle. As Preacher touched the weapon, a man stepped out of the trees holding a bow and arrow. The bowstring was drawn back tautly, and all it would take to send the arrow driving deep into Preacher's body was the slightest motion of the man's fingers. Raven's Wing spoke sharply in Assiniboine. Now, Preacher was fairly fluent in the language, so he had no trouble translating the words.
Two Bears, no! These strangers are friends. They rescued me from Snakeheart's men.
The bow and arrow did not budge a fraction of an inch in the warrior's hands. Preacher didn't make any threatening moves as a result.
You better stay still as you can be, fellas. I bet this old hat of mine, there are more of them in the trees just waiting to turn us into pincushions.
The warrior Raven had called Two Bears was a big husky man with a couple of feathers in his slick down black hair. From the looks of the way he was glaring at Preacher, he'd taken a dislike to the mountain man right off.
Two Bears, the raiders are all dead. This man is the one called Preacher.
Preacher? That's right. It's been a while since I've visited Bent Leg Two Bears, but you ought to remember me. And this is Audie and Nighthawk. Y'all know them, too.
The little man.
I know you mean no insult by that.
Could somebody maybe tell me what's going on? Are we all gonna die?
Lorenzo was unable to follow the conversation because it was spoken in the Assiniboine tongue.
Oh, eventually. But I got a hunch it ain't gonna be tonight.
Two Bears slowly lowered his bow and let the tension off the string. He made a curt motion, and one by one, nearly a dozen more Assiniboine warriors stepped out of the trees. Their bows were still raised and ready to launch their arrows.
Whew, Lord of mercy. We was in a fix, all right.
Well, still might be. You just stay calm and follow my lead.
Easier said than done when you start jabbering in that redskin talk and I don't have no earthly idea what you're saying.
Stay where you are.
Preacher stood up and moved deliberately toward Two Bears, keeping his hands in front of him so it was obvious they were empty. He confronted Two Bears.
I've always been friends with the Assiniboine, and the Gros Ventre and their cousins the Blackfoot are my enemies. People who live in the mountains know that.
This is a thing that is known.
You probably already found the bodies of the three Gros Ventre raiders in the trees. There's three more up atop the bluff. They attacked us and we killed them. Then we found the one called Raven's Wing, who was their prisoner.
He speaks the truth, Two Bears.
Then the people of Bent Leg owe you a debt for saving one of our fairest maidens.
The friendship of Two Bears and the rest of the Assiniboine is ample payment of that debt.
Two Bears hesitated, but only for a second. He gripped Preacher's hand, then ordered the other warriors to lower their weapons.
Should I be heaving a sigh of relief about now, Preacher?
I reckon you could do that. We're all friends now.
Oh, thank the Lord for that. I was about to mess my drawers when all them Indians stepped out the woods like that.
The Assiniboine warriors hunkered near the fire, except for a couple who moved off into the trees at Two Bears' command. Two Bears himself sat close to Raven's Wing, and Preacher sensed the possessiveness in the man. He didn't exactly act like Raven was his wife, but that he had it in mind that she might be one of these days.
After the Gros Ventre raided your village, you pursued him?
At first, Bent Leg said we would not give chase, since they stole no ponies. But I persuaded him that we should pursue them anyway.
To rescue Raven's Wing, you mean?
Yes. She's his niece. And he did not think it right to risk the lives of his warriors for one prisoner, even though he is her uncle.
Preacher understood. As chief, Bent Leg's first responsibility was to the entire band, and he couldn't be seen to be playing favorites because one of his relatives was in danger.
But you changed his mind.
I had no choice. Raven's Wing could not live her life as a slave to the filthy Gros Ventre. In the morning, we will return to the village. The people will celebrate that Raven's Wing is safe. And there will be a feast of thanks for Preacher and his friends.
Preacher wishes to spend the winter in our village.
That will be for Bent Leg to decide.
After the events of the evening, everyone was tired. Preacher, Audie, Nighthawk, and Lorenzo rolled up in their blankets to sleep. They didn't have to worry about standing guard tonight. The Assiniboine were gonna take care of that.
They ain't going to murder us in our sleep, are they, Preacher?
No, not likely. Hell, if they weren't as dead, they could have done it before now. You know, some folks think Indians are tricky, but they really ain't. Least way when it comes to killing. Hell, they're pretty straightforward about that.
Oh, well, I'll sleep really good now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I intend to.
The lodges of the Assiniboine village were built along the banks of a creek that flowed through the valley. When winter clamped its frigid grip on the land, the stream would freeze over and the people of the village would have to chop down through the ice to get water and fish. But it would help sustain them through the long, gray, cold months. Right now, even though the air was chilly, there was no snow on the ground, and all the evidence of the ice storm several days earlier had melted and vanished. The creek still bubbled along, making its merry music. Winter was almost close enough to just reach out and touch, but it wasn't here yet. Two Bears was right about the celebration. Happy cries went up from the people of the village when the group rode in the next day and they saw Raven's Wing on the back of Two Bears' pony riding in front of them. There were plenty of curious looks cast toward Preacher and his companions, but since they had ridden in with Two Bears and the other warriors, the rest of the band was inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume they were friendly. The crowd around Two Bears' pony parted so that Bent Leg could limp through the opening. The old chief embraced Raven's Wing as she slid from the pony's back to the ground.
The one who was like a daughter to me has returned.
Then the chief turned toward the newcomers who had swung down from their saddles.
Preacher!
He threw his arms around the mountain man and pounded him on the back.
It's good to see you again, Bentleg.
Many winters have passed since last you visited. We have each of us grown old since then.
Well, maybe I have. You still look the same as you always did, Bentleg.
You lie like a white man.
Bentleg turned to Audie.
Little man, another of my old friends. The village of Bentleg is truly blessed today to have such visitors.
Bentleg stooped down to embrace Audie with another round of back slapping. Bentleg's greeting for Nighthawk, however, was more reserved. The Crow and the Assiniboine were not enemies, but they weren't the same either. The tribal differences were minor, though. Bentleg turned back to Preacher.
Did Two Bears and the others find you when they sought Raven's Wing?
They did.
It was Preacher and his friends who rescued me from the Grovant.
Bentleg looked surprised, and Two Bears scowled a little. He had planned to save Raven's Wing, but circumstances hadn't worked out that way.
We owe you a great debt, my old friend.
It's already been paid. But there is a great courtesy you could do for me and my friends if you would.
Speak it, and it shall be done.
Now, we're looking for a place to spend the winter. And we can't think of anywhere we'd rather do it than right here with the Assiniboine.
So shall it be. You will be our honored guests until the spring comes.
Thank you, old friend.
There are widows in the village whose husbands had no brothers, and some unmarried women as well.
Well, we'll see.